From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. President Trump slapped tariffs on imports of washing machines, solar energy cells, and solar panels on Tuesday. The message is clear. A year into his presidency, Trump is ready to make good on his promise to put America first. Critics warn of a trade war with China and massive domestic job loss. On its heels, Canada opens trade with Asia in a new deal, leaving out one major player, the U.S. This hour on Point, will America first leave America behind? You can join us on air or online. Does putting America first mean America pays a price? And what is that price? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Jacob Schlesinger, a senior correspondent covering trade for The Wall Street Journal. You can link to his piece, U.S. Imposes New Tariffs, Ramping Up America First Trade Policy, at our website, onpointradio.org. Jake, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Great. Thank you.
So how exactly will these tariffs exactly work?
So in a couple of weeks, the tariffs will take effect. They're a combination in the case of the solar panels of tariffs and quotas, where they will start at a certain level and they ratchet down over 3 or 4 years. The way the law works is that these are not intended to be permanent, but to give an industry temporary relief. There are not, with just one small exception, there are not exceptions for countries, so they should apply to both tariffs and washing machines and relevant components globally.
So 30% tariff on solar panels, is that right? 20% on the first million or so washing machines?
Right. Okay.
All right. Let me play here President Trump. Here he is yesterday at the White House after signing this executive order to slap these tariffs on solar panels and washing machines. He said that there will only be stock increases in this for U.S. companies.
If you look at solar and if you look at the washing machine companies, that's really what happened today. You're going to have people getting jobs again, and we're going to make our own product again. It's been a long time.
So some American companies, Jake, petitioned for these tariffs. They complained for years that rising imports were eating into their sales. Is this what they were hoping for? What's their reaction?
You know, the reaction has been largely positive. The remedies were not as steep as they had wanted. They wanted tariffs of up to 50%. They also wanted to set a minimum price floor. But by and large, I think they were happy to get the protection. Both in the case of the washing machines and the solar panels, they issued statements of praise for the president for taking action.
Lots of tariffs largely directed at China and South Korea, talk that this could ignite a trade war. How has China responded to the Trump tariffs?
So first to say where they're aimed at, it's actually a little bit more complicated than that, which is that they are, in fact, in these cases, as you say, aimed at producers based in China and in South Korea. But one reason that the tariffs took the form that they did, which is globally, is because of a complaint from the industry that, in fact, the Chinese and South Korean producers, when they were hit with more conventional tariffs aimed at production from their home countries, just kept shifting production. And so what's new and interesting and kind of radical about these proposals is that they're of global tariffs as opposed to narrowly focused. Both China and South Korea have issued statements of complaint. There hasn't been any, you know, direct action at this point, but it's early days yet. South Korea has talked about taking the United States to the WTO, and in fact, in different iterations of their fight with the U.S. over trade and washing machines, they already have a WTO complaint live, and the WTO has in fact authorized South Korea to issue retaliation in that case.
Mm. Here is the South Korean trade minister blasting President Trump's newly imposed tariffs in a meeting on Monday.
We regret the latest U.S. safeguard measures against our industry. They're excessive and would clearly violate WTO rules.
And so, Jake, White House advisors warned that this isn't the first. They talked about additional trade measures related to steel and aluminum and other products could be coming. Tell us about that.
Right. So when President Trump came in, or actually if you go back to a seminal speech that he gave during the campaign, I think it was in June of 2016, he was very specific in laying out a whole bunch of trade law provisions that he would consider that had not been used in 20 or more years by other administrations to start issuing trade restrictions and protecting American industry. In 2016, they launched a number of studies that were related to those, and a number of cases were in the pipeline. The solar and the solar panel and the washing machines were two of those. But two other studies that they launched using a different law would look at protection for steel and aluminum. And those actually have a deadline for making a decision in April. And so we will know by then, if not sooner, whether they plan to take action there. the other major trade action, which they've announced and they've signaled will come soon, but we don't know quite how soon, is an investigation broadly into China and allegations that the Chinese government has improperly forced U.S. companies or pressured them to turn over valuable intellectual property. The exact penalties that might come with that are a little unclear, but they are looking at a fairly wide range that would include tariffs and possible investment restrictions. Mm.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now. From Los Angeles is Greg Autry, Assistant Professor of Clinical Entrepreneurship at the University of Southern California, the Marshall School of Business there. He's co-author of the book Death by China, Confronting the Dragon with Peter Navarro, who leads the White House Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy. Greg, welcome to On Point.
Glad to be here.
Greg, thank you. Will these new tariffs hurt U.S. manufacturing or help it? What's your view?
Well, I think they're great for U.S. manufacturing. Honestly, I don't think they go quite far enough, but it's a good signal to China in particular and our international trading partners in general that we're not going to play by Marcus the Queensberry rules in a global trade knife fight, that the U.S. is going to pay attention to its interest and move forward. For solar in particular, the manufacturers needed this, and I think it's a critical opportunity to save a U.S. industry that U.S. taxpayers helped create and support for many, many years.
Manufacturers say they needed this. They petitioned for these tariffs. But talk to me about the average American consumer. How will these tariffs impact them?
Very little, honestly. I've got 40 solar panels on my roof, and I drive two electric cars, and I'm a big fan of this technology. But when you look at a solar installation in your home, there's a lot of hardware there. There's the panels and the mounting. There's, of course, all the electrical wiring and the conduit and the inverters. And the actual modules themselves make up a relatively small part of the total solar install cost. You might pay $3, $3.50 a watt for installed panels on the roof of your home. The modules themselves are only about 35 cents a watt. So a tariff on one-tenth of the cost of your install isn't going to be that significant. And further, that tariff's going to be split between a reduction in margin for the installers and the resellers and the consumer. So I expect 5% increases. And to put it in context, this is a 5% increase in a product whose price has dropped by orders of magnitude over the years. So I think consumers will hardly notice this.
If I could actually jump in, please, Jake, go ahead. A little differently on that. And there are certainly people who say that. I don't know that that's the consensus view. Green Tech Media put out a study that estimated that the volume of installation would go down or would be about 11% less than it otherwise would absent the tariffs. And I think that the level of prices varies partly based on whether you're talking about residential installation, which is what Professor Autry was talking about for his home, and utility scale installation, which I think has very thin margins. And again, not to say that it necessarily is going to have a big ripple effect, but there certainly are people out there who've looked at it who do think it will have a bigger effect.
Greg?
Yeah, the question was about the average consumer, so that was the question I answered. I don't think there's any opinion or doubt about the fact that the modules are a small component of the total install. That's simply a fact. And the fact is that any tariff or tax is split by the consumer and the seller at some level. So clearly it's going to be less than a tenth of a percent of a third. So I don't see a huge difference in an industry where prices have been graciously declining for consumers for many, many years.
So, Greg,
Green Tech and other folks have an interest in promoting a story because installers would like to keep their margins high.
So do you think this is just the beginning, Greg? We talked about perhaps steel or aluminum products receiving tariffs. The White House has talked about that. Does this signal the start of a wider administration offensive against U.S. trading partners? How do you see it?
Well, I'd hate to see the word offensive. Certainly the president was elected on an agenda of putting America first, restoring American manufacturing jobs, and actually appreciating the unique value that manufacturing returns to our country's economy that you don't get from services sector jobs. So I expect him to follow through on that, and this would seem to be an indication, thankfully, that he's serious about it. Hopefully we won't have to keep doing this because our trading partners will finally understand that we've ended 30 years of naively rolling over every time You know, we were cheated or abused in trading, and we're not going to hand over another industry. We're not going to hand over our auto industry and our commercial aircraft industry to the Chinese, which they have explicitly targeted in their next set of five-year plans.
Does it exacerbate in any way trade tensions with other nations, not just China, not just South Korea, Mexico? I mean, lots of nations around the world looking to us at this particular moment.
Certainly. They much prefer to deal with a trading partner who is compliant and naive and like I said, rolls over every time. So sure, they won't like the fact that they're suddenly dealing with somebody who is looking after their own self-interest and instead of an international giveaway where we ship a growing and growing percentage of our GDP off to other countries every year. 30 years of increasing trade deficits has got to stop at some point.
You know, Gene, I was going to just say one thing on that, and I believe this is, you know, an issue inside the administration as well, which is, you know, there are trade-offs in terms of what are your priorities in a trade policy. And I mean, I think there are some who say that far and away, particularly if you're using the President Trump's rubric of a large trade deficit, that China is by far, you know, the biggest actor to worry about. And I think there are some people who are concerned that if you take actions that are also aimed at Mexico, Canada, South Korea, even if you feel they're justified in the ways that Greg was talking about, you know, that distracts from building a broader global coalition against China.
Hey, it's Ophira Eisenberg, host of Ask Me Another. We headed out to L.A. for two all-celebrity contestant shows, and the competition was more intense than the traffic on the 405. Linda Cardellini, Jeff Garland, Lance Reddick, and Paul Rust. Only one took home an Ask Me Another Rubik's Cube. Find Ask Me Another on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing President Trump's actions on tariffs and response at home and abroad this hour. You can join the conversation. Are you worried how China will retaliate? Are you okay with the rest of the world cutting trade deals without the United States? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's President Trump in a November speech at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, saying that when it comes to trade, America will always come first.
We are not going to let the United States be taken advantage of anymore. I am always going to put America first, the same way that I expect all of you in this room to put your countries first.
And here's Blake Jones. He's the co-founder of Namaste Solar, a company based in Boulder, Colorado. In an interview with the Associated Press this week, he said he was worried what the tariffs could mean for the solar jobs that already exist in this country.
If those tariffs are high enough, we could see the loss of tens of thousands of downstream solar jobs in the name of protecting a few hundred jobs, people on rooftops installing these solar panels, people selling and designing the solar systems. You can't outsource those to China or to another country. Those are jobs that have to be here in the United States, and that's where the bulk of the U.S. solar jobs are.
We're speaking this hour with Jake Schlesinger, senior correspondent covering trade for The Wall Street Journal, and Greg Autry, assistant professor of clinical entrepreneurship at USC's Marshall School of Business. Greg, you heard Blake Jones there in Boulder, Colorado, talking about these solar jobs. I mean, I guess there are two sides to the story here, with solar panel manufacturers favoring the tariffs, but installers opposing them, calling them real job killers. I guess it depends on where you sit, how this impacts you.
Yeah, and they don't really want to say that it's profit killers and take-home pay for the owners of solar installer killers is what it really is. I don't think you're going to see actual drop in number of installs from, as I said, a very, very teeny increase in the net price. But, you know, a 5% loss in margins will certainly make that gentleman's Christmas less exciting. This is also a short-term versus long-term thinking that has deviled the United States for years. It's time that we start thinking about our long-term national security and industrial policy choices the same way that China does. They make five-year plans. These are integrated plans, and they target specific high-technology industries that they want to own because they know that the long-term multi-generational jobs come from manufacturing. We focus on quarterly returns and very short-term interest in service jobs that come and go and don't provide long-term economic growth for our country. And it's the reason that we've been stagnant. It's the reason that we've got 30 years of increasing trade deficits. It's time that we actually start thinking strategically and realize that getting a factory and training and intellectual property that feeds families for a generation is a lot more valuable than worrying about next quarter's service jobs.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now from Washington, Chad Ballin, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He's also the co-host of a weekly podcast called Trade Talks, which covers economic trade policy. Chad, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So Greg Autry says it's about time the U.S. levels the playing field when it comes to trade, that these tariffs on solar panels and washing machines, it's a good idea. What do you say? What's your response?
Well, I do think there's one recognizable concern that we have to address, and that is, as Professor Autry indicated, that China operates under a fundamentally different economic system than we do in the United States. And that is a persistent concern that we have to figure out a long-term strategy to address that. Now, I would argue that what the Trump administration is doing here is still a far away from a long-term strategy on how we deal with China. Just slapping tariffs on products really don't help us down the path of actually engaging with China. For one, you know, half of the story here in this case is about washing machines that are primarily produced by South Korean companies, Samsung and LG. And are really the story about American consumers really liking these products and wanting to buy them. And slapping tariffs on this is really not addressing China at all, but it's making it more difficult for American households, people like you and me, that got to go out and buy a washing machine to now have to pay more for it. So, you know, there's severe consequences to what I would argue is a very short-term approach that the Trump administration is actually taking to thinking about trade policy at the moment, and especially reflective in these actions.
So, Chad, China hinted that it could take a similar approach. Is there concern here about retaliatory tariffs on China's part?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, South Korea is a country that tends to behave well within the international system. So they've talked about filing a WTO dispute against the United States over this, as Jake mentioned. China is known to kind of act sometimes that way, but sometimes to also act outside of the system. So back in 2009, when the Obama administration imposed a similar set of import restrictions on tires, China reacted not all that well by retaliating against the United States over farming products, chicken feet and automobiles. And there were consequences there for American industries, American exporting industries. So this isn't going to be a free lunch. For as many actions that we take, the United States, the Trump administration takes to restrict imports, if there's retaliation, that hurts American exporting companies and the workers that work for them and the jobs that are associated with that. And this really, to my mind, is a quite destructive path to potentially go down.
So, Greg Autry, don't China and South Korea have leverage of their own to this point? They're big importers of American-made machinery, agricultural products. They buy a lot of soybeans, other crops from American heartland. Could China easily just turn around and retaliate, punish American companies? I mean, to Chad's point, there are no free lunches here.
You certainly have to consider that, but you also, I think, have to put this in context of how China's had to behave. How did we get here? We're worried about starting a trade war. The fact of the matter is we're in a trade war and we're losing. In the case of solar, this isn't just Chinese manufacturers selling things cheap. The Chinese government used their military, the People's Liberation Army Unit 61398 in Shanghai, cyber attack unit, to infiltrate a variety of American companies over the years, and specifically solar power manufacturing companies, deliver this material to Chinese national champions. The evidence was clear enough from multiple private companies and from FBI counterintelligence that the Obama administration issued an indictment against Chinese military officers for this back in 2014. So if we've got a country who's willing to go so far as to use their military to attack individual American companies, worrying about what their response to us trying to defend ourselves from that, I think that's pathetically cowardly to even debate that. At some point, you have to stand up, say, we're not going to take that anymore, and the response is going to come or not. But, if you continue to allow things to go the way they are, you're going to see the results we see, which is just an ever-declining industrial base, which at this point is becoming a real threat to America's future and to our national security.
So Jake Schlesinger, President Trump said, no, I'm not worried about a trade war with this action. How do you view it? How do people see it in Washington?
I think, you know, people are waiting and seeing right now. As you say, this is kind of the first of what will likely be more. And I think people are holding back a little bit, wanting to see what the totality is. As I say, I think that, you know, I mean, part of what's going on here, both in the United States and I think globally, is, as Chad mentioned, I mean, there is a broad concern about, do we as a global financial economic trade system have the right way of responding to China? And I think that, you know, the more that the administration focuses on China and coordinates with allies, I think there would be great sympathy and even coordination in terms of pushing back against China. I think that the more that the U.S. kind of seems scattershot and sort of dealing equally with trading partners across the world, I think that the danger of creating a kind of a trade war is probably greater. I think another issue, which we haven't gotten into, but, you know, on a separate front, the Trump administration is also pushing pretty hard to try and make changes at the World Trade Organization. And I think that the concern for a lot of people of how that plays out is that the more that it undermines, ends up undermining the authority of the World Trade Organization, the more that kind of weakens the arbiter that has helped prevent trade wars over the last 20, 30 years, and that could sort of take some of the guardrails off.
So South Korea's trade minister talked about World Trade Organization rules and going before the World Trade Organization. Greg Autry, I mean, is that a concern? Do you worry about the WTO and getting involved in this and how the U.S. would come out on that deal?
Yeah, and again, I think the China and South Korea issues are distinctly different. As was noted, South Korea plays by the rules a whole lot better. China essentially ignores the rules. I would be excited to see the China issues go to the WTO because I think the more attention we can bring to factors like using your military to attack private companies is a great thing to have out there in the press. Regarding South Korea, that is certainly a more complex issue. But the main thing I would point out to Americans is you keep getting told to worry about these service jobs. If you look at the countries whose standards of living are going up, whose national outlook looks positive, they're the countries that have focused for years and years on taking American manufacturing jobs, and to their benefit. I mean, I admire the South Koreans for doing that, but their economy looks great. You look at Germany, you look at China, the growth and prosperity comes from investing in manufacturing.
Let me get Mike in here from Queensbury, New York. Hi, Mike. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jana.
Hi. Go ahead.
A little background. I have a degree in physics. I've worked in research computing for years. I'm an electrical engineer, and I just installed solar panels on my house. And I take issue with the cost analysis of the previous commenter on the fact that the cost of the panels is an insignificant part of this.
Modules and cells, which is what the taxes on the panels.
Right. The modules themselves cost me about 40% of the installation. I must admit, we have a good solar installer. They work with a customer. They only sell you what you need. And I'm familiar with the electronics industry.
Mm-hmm.
The 30% tariff will, at minimum, increase the cost of my system 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's far from the 1% he mentioned.
Okay.
There are a lot of solar installers that will not give you a good deal. They'll put in extra stuff that you don't need, which raises the cost. But I would say, as a model, look at the automobile industry when Japan started making cars years ago. Everybody complained. We went into protectionism mode. But now, years later, they make a quality product. It's a good price. It's providing us jobs in this country in sales and service. And they moved their factories over here. It took decades. That's what you're going to have to do here, because the manufacturers are not going to be arm-twisted by the government into paying 10 times more for labor here than they're paying in China.
Yeah. Mike, thank you very much for the call. Chad Bowen, jump back in here. What does this mean for American jobs? We've talked about the American consumer. What about American jobs?
Well, I wanted to push back against this point that we have an ever-declining industrial base in the United States, because I'm not sure that's quite accurate. You know, American manufacturing production today is higher than it's ever been, you know, in American history. But that's not the same thing as meaning that there's, you know, manufacturing jobs, because what's happening increasingly as advanced manufacturing takes over, robotics, automation, there's fewer and fewer lower-skilled jobs associated with manufacturing. And as economies mature, like the United States, Europe, Japan, they naturally move into services. And we're not talking just about retail services. You know, there's a lot of high-end services jobs as well. But I don't think that it's accurate to say that the United States has been, you know, just completely moving out of manufacturing. It's not to absolve the Chinese from some of the actions that they're taking that are predatory. But it's not accurate to say that the United States still isn't heavily involved in manufacturing and at the frontier of a lot of these industries.
Jake Schlesinger, would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I guess I would just add a couple other things. I mean, one is, you know, if you're looking at a policy, if your goal were to build a stronger domestic solar panel industry, I think there's a lot of debate about what that policy would be, whether it would simply be tariffs on a particular sector of a technology that may in fact not be the cutting edge technology, or whether it would be something more along the lines of the industrial policy that Greg had mentioned that China has adopted. And so I think that's one question. I think another, though, that's interesting is if you look at a lot of what the Trump administration has been talking about, particularly the last 2 days, both President Trump and his White House National Economic Council Director, Gary Cohn, the point of these tariffs is very much to restore what they call manufacturing in America without actually regard for where the company is based. And one of the interesting comments from both the president and Mr. Cohn was, this isn't aimed at Samsung and LG, the South Korean producers. This is actually aimed at encouraging them to build their factories in the United States. Mm. And as long as they build in the United States, we're perfectly happy that they're taking market share out of Whirlpool.
And so are there incentives for them to do that? I mean, does that look likely?
Well, I mean, they've already started building factories. And I guess their argument is the incentive or the disincentive to import is, you know, we're going to slap tariffs on anything you make outside the United States. Hopefully that means that you'll build more in the United States. Now, those companies have both said that that's not an accurate rendition and that they may actually slow production in the United States because of higher costs of importing materials. You know, we'll have to see how that plays out.
Let's go to Detroit. Here's Watts. I'm glad you called, Watts. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, and hi, Jane, and guests. I was really hit with NAFTA, lost my job with my co-workers, all genders, all races, and it was just a big gush up to the top, major profits to the CEOs and the corporations, and then they blamed everything on automation. It was not the case here, and with millions of people throughout the country. Also, national security, all these giveaways to communist China, and I emphasize the word communists are great friends.
So, Watts, do you support the tariffs? What about these tariffs?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm not a big Trump supporter, but I loved what he said on the campaign trail. The American workers have been screwed royally. The whole country has all these drugs coming in illegally because they increased commerce with Mexico and China, all the smuggling going on.
Okay.
I highly recommend Border Wars. It's on Justice TV, Justice Network, where JusticeNetworkTV.com.
Watts, thank you. I'm going to jump in because our time is short, but Chad Bown, you know, there's Watts. NAFTA hit him hard. He likes what he sees with his president. He likes these tariffs because he sees that Donald Trump is standing up for America, America first.
Yeah, but I think the big concern is what that actually means in practice and in reality. I mean, getting back to this point on, you know, are tariffs that the Trump administration is imposing ultimately going to force maybe even foreign companies to set up production in the United States to get around those tariffs? It might in certain products, but then the big worry is, well, trading partners will just do the same thing. And that means current things that we export to those countries, they may make those things stop because they have the same sort of tariffs as well. So it's just a downward spiral.
Ever get to Friday, look back on the week, and say to yourself, what just happened? I'm Sam Sanders. Check out my podcast, It's Been a Minute, where every Friday we catch up on the news and the culture of the week and try to make sense of it all. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing President Trump's vision for America First this hour. New trade policy with regard to tariffs on washing machines and solar panels. You can join the conversation. What's the message you want President Trump to take to Davos in Switzerland? He's there now. What's the message he needs to hear from the rest of the world? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm speaking this hour with Jake Schlesinger, senior correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, Chad Bounds, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, and Greg Autry at USC's Marshall School of Business. In a speech in March in Louisville, Kentucky, President Trump went after NAFTA, saying it has been bad for American jobs.
Since NAFTA was approved in 1994, the worst trade deal ever made by any country, I think, in the world, America has lost nearly one-third of its manufacturing jobs.
And here is Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau at the World Economic Forum in Davos yesterday with his case for free trade and a message for President Trump.
We're working very hard to make sure that our neighbor to the south recognizes how good NAFTA is and that it has benefited not just our economy, but his economy and the world's economy. But we're also very much open to more trade deals involving more people as long as it's in the best benefit of all of our citizens.
Greg Autry, that's pretty pointed there from the Canadian Prime Minister. Talk about NAFTA and how these new tariffs might impact the renegotiation of NAFTA that the United States is in the middle of with Mexico and Canada.
I see very little direct impact from these tariffs on NAFTA. I would have to check the data, but I don't think the washing machine and solar panels are going to cause a lot. There has been some transshipment occasionally through Mexico and Canada of Chinese product into the U.S. I think one of the key things to note is the previous caller conflated the idea of cells and modules, which are the silicone wafers, which are a small part of the actual panel, with his panels. He paid 40% for the fully assembled panel. China has been exporting these cells and modules, which is the only part that the tariff is on. And then other countries have been assembling panels and putting them together, and that is sometimes an issue. I think it's also important to notice the caller mentioned the Japanese cars. He's absolutely right, but what he didn't mention is that President Reagan took stiff action against the Japanese in the 80s and negotiated a quota that limited the number of Japanese cars, giving U.S. manufacturers the opportunity to reset their business successfully, and now we do, in fact, have a regime that works well with a trading partner who respects the rule of law, which is not the case in China's case. As far as NAFTA is concerned, I think that the message, though, is clear that, just like Justin Trudeau said, President Trump is likely to make deals that are for the benefit of American citizens.
Let me get Lauren in here from Salem, Massachusetts. Lauren, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I wanted to ask the opinions of your guests on the blatant irony that the president is placing these tariffs in the same breath that he'll be going to Davos to say that America is open for business. Are these tariffs going to disrupt our possible business, or do we think that they're going to increase possibilities? Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. Chad Bound, what do you say?
I think disrupt. It's really unclear to me, and I'm looking forward to what the president's message in Davos is going to be. His tone makes it extraordinarily difficult for leaders in other countries to engage with the United States right now in any sort of constructive negotiations on trade deals. You know, the NAFTA negotiations are a case in point. At the same time that they're trying to renegotiate NAFTA, the Trump administration is potentially imposing import tariffs on billions of dollars of Canadian exports into the United States, on lumber, on jets, on newsprint. And as part of the NAFTA negotiations, they're threatening to strip away some of the legal protections that are in there to protect exports like that. So I think, you know, Prime Minister Trudeau has already kind of suffered through what it's like to negotiate trade deals with President Trump. And there are going to be a lot of takers at the leadership level and other governments that are very eager right now, even if the Trump administration wanted to go out and negotiate advanced trade deals with the United States.
Well, here is President Trump's economic advisor at a White House briefing yesterday. This is Gary Cohn, saying that the president wants to promote the United States to the world at the Davos Forum in Switzerland this week.
America is open for business. We want the world to invest in America and to create jobs for hardworking Americans.
I guess, Jake Schlesinger, to Lauren's point and to our other listeners who are writing in here, I mean, are other countries moving on without us? Is the U.S. being left behind? We've got a renegotiation of NAFTA. We've got TPP. You know, what would you say about that? Is the U.S. better off out of the loop? Should we be sticking up for, you know, what President Trump says we've been taken advantage of for many years? Time to stop? I mean, how do you see this trade sort of more broadly speaking?
So, I mean, that's a really excellent question, and I guess I'd come at it from a couple of angles. I mean, one, yes, at some level, I think a lot of countries are trying to figure out what to do with the change in direction in the United States and are hedging their bets and finding an alternative. You know, the United States had negotiated, was one of 12 countries negotiating a broad Pacific Rim Pact, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. President Trump pulled out of that. And just yesterday in Japan, the other 11 countries announced that they've reached an agreement to move forward. The European Union is negotiating and reaching trade agreements with Japan and a lot of other countries around the world. And I think that so there is a question of, you know, what do you do if the United States isn't going to be taking the lead? I think a couple things, though, to counter that. One is, you know, the United States does remain the world's largest economy. And I think that the Trump administration, President Trump and his trade advisors are making a calculated bet that in the end, we do have leverage that we have not sufficiently used over time to try and get people to cut better deals using the leverage of that. But I think that's a broader point that the Trump administration has been talking about recently, and I think President Trump will take to Davos, which is, you know, and I think this actually gets to the point of the caller watch from Detroit as well, which is, you know, we can sit and debate the economics of these things and the legalities of these things. But the reality is, among a certain portion of people in the United States and elsewhere, trade has become politically toxic. And I think that you know, part of, you know, what President Trump is doing is he's the cause of a lot of this disruption, and part of it is that he's the symptom of a lot of this disruption. And I think what their message they're trying to take to the world is, look, free trade had lost its credibility to a lot of people in the United States before President Trump was ever elected, and somebody needs to make it seem as if they're standing up for these people in order to regain credibility. I mean, TPP is a good example where, you know, we can wring our hands about how the U.S. had, President Trump had pulled the United States out of TPP. A lot of people feel like that was effectively dead before he ever came into office because there just wasn't political will in Congress to adopt another trade deal. So it's a little more complicated than that.
I see. And let's get Dolores in here from Waterford, Pennsylvania. Hi, Dolores. I'm glad you called. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi. I have a couple points and I have a couple questions.
Okay.
The TPP,
yep.
The fact that the United States pulled out of the TPP, that's cost the American farmer $4.4 billion a year. They're losing $400,000 a day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Wilbur Ross suggested that the U.S. is ready for a trade war, and even Prime Minister Modi now has said that isolationism and protectionism is bad for the global economy. I think he's a pretty smart guy. So here's a couple questions. The tariffs. Imposing tariffs and protectionism, weren't those a couple elements that led to the depression amongst other things in 1929? And how's Trump going to be, how's his speech going to be received at Davos, especially being given by someone who's declared bankruptcy at least four times?
Dolores, thank you. I'm going to jump in. Time is short. That first point, Greg Autry, Dolores wonders, this protectionism that she sees in Donald Trump, she recognizes it led to the Great Depression. What do you say?
Well, I would say that was a major exaggeration, but certainly the drop in global trade was a contributor there. We don't want to see a drop in global trade. As one of the other commentators mentioned, the U.S. has the most attractive market in the world. When you're holding four aces, you don't negotiate. You dictate terms. But we can still dictate terms that give us an opportunity to benefit from global trade, and it's something that we should do. What we shouldn't do is roll over in the face of aggressive attacks on an industry that the American taxpayer paid to create and demand that the American taxpayer paid to create and allow a country like China to use their military to attack our private companies and pretend that it's somehow impolite for the United States to respond to that with some minor tariffs on those products. It's time to say that it is perfectly reasonable for the U.S. to take our workers and the interest of our economy into account when we negotiate trade deals. It is not our obligation.
Here's the Indian Prime Minister. Let me get Modi in here, Greg, because he opened the World Economic Forum in Davos yesterday with a speech that some delegates called a jab at President Trump's protectionist trade policies.
Further growth in the global supply chain has also stopped. The solution to this worrisome situation against globalization is not isolation.
Chad Bown, I mean, India has had its own battle in this regard, imposing emergency taxes on solar panels imported from China and Malaysia. A lot of people looking at a clear imbalance there, saying, well, India's taking action. Why shouldn't the U.S. stand up for itself, to Greg Autry's point?
On trade policy, India is hardly the role model, unfortunately, for which the United States, you know, should hold itself up to. It's a very protectionist economy and has a lot of trade barriers and is difficult to do business. So, you know, Modi's comments were quite intriguing. But I do think, to the broader point of, you know, is President Trump's action potentially pushing other countries to, you know, open up more and to move on ahead and to show additional leadership in the international system? And we might see some of that. Specifically to your caller's point about American agriculture, the problem with the TPP agreement for them is all of these other countries, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, that are getting together, they are opening up their markets to each other. But because the United States is not part of that deal, it continues to face tariffs, and it's going to get discriminated against. And American beef and cattle ranchers can't sell into those markets because they don't get this same preferential access. And so that's the big worry. Any deal that the United States is not part of, any trade deal, yep, it's actually discriminated against. And it hurts American workers and farmers. And that's the concern, that the rest of the world is moving forward without us, and we're going to pay the price.
Here's Nancy in Ames, Iowa. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hello, Jane. I'm concerned about the strategy of looking at trade negotiations one industry at a time and the impact that these negotiations and tariffs might have on other industries, in particular agricultural exports. We've already lost soybean exports to China this year as they buy more from South America. They've increased restrictions on weed seed content on shipments of soybeans from the U.S. I fear that we will face tariffs in the agricultural sector or just reductions in purchases of our ag commodities. The American consumers cannot absorb our ag commodity products like corn, soybeans, hogs, and cattle. The ag sector in the U.S. is dependent on exports, and U.S. exports help our trade imbalance. And I wonder, can't we take an America First approach with multi-industry, multilateral trade negotiations?
It's a good point, Nancy. Jake Schlesinger, jump in here. One industry at a time, tariff by tariff. I mean, and what about these ag exports?
Well, you know, these things aren't trade-offs. I mean, sometimes individual industries come up because, you know, they're responding to complaints filed by those industries, which is what happened in the case of solar and washing machines. But, you know, I think you do have to look at the broad picture, and I don't think the administration is purely looking at it individually. You know, you do look at strategies toward NAFTA, strategies toward China. But I think that you're right. I mean, I think, you know, agriculture tends to often be kind of the collateral damage in a lot of these trade debates and trade wars. And another issue, which you didn't mention, but I think has been there in the background, is in NAFTA, where, you know, Mexico has diversified its purchases, I believe it's of corn and wheat, to replace some of the American supplies with Latin American suppliers as well. And so, you know, I mean, I think what the Trump people would say is it's a broad strategy and you have to look at the totality of the picture. And I think, you know, they haven't fully fleshed out their strategy yet. And so we really have to see whether, you know, on net, you know, there's a clear, coherent strategy that's designed on balance to improve production in the United States or not.
Jake, last point here. Environmentalists have bemoaned the new Trump tariffs. Is it fair to say that this might be a setback for the development of renewable energy in this country, at least?
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of it gets back to the debate that that Greg was having with some of the people calling in as to whether, you know, the costs are increased to the point whether it does reduce demand or not. I mean, I do think, you know, one of the interesting things which we haven't talked about and hasn't gotten as much attention in this context is, you know, this is as much an energy policy in a way as it is a trade policy. And, you know, the Trump administration, I think, has made clear certainly compared to the Obama administration, that renewables are not as high a priority for them as it was for the Obama administration. And they, you know, will place a much greater emphasis on fossil fuels. And so, you know, whether this actively is a setback for renewables, you know, I think it perhaps fits of a piece of administration that doesn't place as high a priority on stoking demand for renewables as its predecessor did.
Greg, go ahead, Greg, Professor.
The Obama administration put higher tariffs on Chinese solar panels. This is just a reaction to deal with the fact that Chinese are now transshipping these products through Malaysia and elsewhere. So I think that that is a false attack. And the key thing is to improve the American environmental situation. As I said, I've got 40 panels on my roof and two electric cars. It's the R&D that the U.S. has put in for years and years and years that has driven what we have now in alternative fuels. If we undermine that by destroying America's manufacturing base and going for cheap, short-term responses, just making the same old products we can make, with environmental depredation in Chinese mining and manufacturing to keep those costs low for American consumers, we will never move forward. We have to fund that R&D. We can't allow that intellectual property to be stolen, and this is a response to that.
Jake Schlesinger, last word. This is America First. This is what Donald Trump campaigned on, and he is delivering. I mean, are we going to see more tariffs to come? What do you see on the horizon?
You know, I think, you know, President Trump has promised them. He said he has wanted them. And I think that we will certainly see more, perhaps more strategically aimed at China. Next, I would say, stay tuned.
Greg Schlesinger, The Wall Street Journal. We will stay tuned, and we hope you'll watch it with us. Thank you very much for being here today, Jake.
My pleasure.
Professor Greg Autry at USC's Marshall School of Business. Professor, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Chad Bown, Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Thanks for your perspective, Chad. Great to have you.
Thanks, Jane.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.